Now, according to new research, Australia's Medicare Rebate Better Access Psychology program is failing those with complex mental health needs. The program, which allows up to 10 subsidised sessions with a psychologist each year, has been labelled inequitable and is in need of urgent reform. Well, joining us now on the line to discuss is lead researcher Dr. Sebastian Rosenberg from the Australian National University. Dr. Rosenberg, thank you for your time.
Good morning.
Good morning. So we'll start by talking about your research. What did your research into the Better Access program uncover?
Well, what we found was that this program has grown exponentially over the last decade or so. It was originally estimated to be quite a fairly small, modest program, but it in fact is now looking at something like $1.5 billion a year, and about 46,000 Australians a week are receiving care. So it's an enormous investment by Australia, and indeed by Australian taxpayers, in this model of care. And really what we were trying to do was to work out if there was any evidence to show about the impact it was having on people's lives. And in a nutshell, we found that evidence very difficult to find. So it really caused us to ask some questions about what we were getting for our money and if this was the best way for us to arrange to meet the needs of people with a mental illness in Australia.
Sure. And I mean, obviously, it's quite difficult to quantify, people's mental health. But some of the research did find that those who had used the 10 sessions initially did return the following year, requiring further treatment.
The issue there was really that there's a couple of things. First of all, the model of care was such that or the rhythm of life, if you like, and you'll be familiar with this, was that the person was supposed to go to their GP and receive a mental health care plan. They would then go to their psychologist and receive their sessions of psychological therapy, typically something like cognitive behavioural therapy. And after that, they were supposed to return to their GPs for a review. And it was there, I guess that was the point at which the GP would be able to make an assessment about the impact of care that the person had received. Were they better or not? What we found in our research was that only about half the plans ever written were reviewed. And so this fundamental checking aspect of the program was absent. And then the second thing we found was that the program began in 2006 in November. And in 2009, about two-thirds of people accessing the Better Access program were new clients. And I guess you'd expect that because the program was still fairly new then. But a couple of years ago, that number had dropped to only about a third. So what you had then really was the idea that people were becoming, if you like, repeat customers to the Better Access program. Now, in my mind, and I need to explain here, you know, I am a policy analyst. I look at services and money and policy and so on. I'm not a clinician, but from what I understand, the idea with cognitive behavioural therapy is that the evidence is strongest for people with mild to moderate disorders, and that you're supposed to be considerably better as a result of the care you receive. So the idea that people were coming back for repeat sessions year after year to me indicated that they may well have problems that are too complex for this kind of care, which then made us, you know, the kind of care which involves just going to see a GP and getting a plan, then relying on a single health professional, in this case typically a psychologist, to meet all of your needs. Now, let me give you an example here. If you have a more complex condition, say something like an eating disorder, it's very likely you need the help not just of a GP and a psychologist, but you may well need the help of a dietitian or a nutritionist or a community nurse or a social worker or potentially a peer worker who has perhaps been through this illness before. So this kind of complexity needs a multidisciplinary team response. And what I guess we're really finding is that this program, as it's currently constituted, fails to deliver that kind of team response. So you have instead people maybe stuck in a cycle year after year of going back for care that doesn't really meet their needs.
Well, I guess that, the single practitioner model does need to be reviewed depending on the case, as you mentioned. But then again, I guess it's accessible to most people, this the subsidised 10 sessions.
Well, it is and it isn't. I have to say that as a program, as you say, run as a single practitioner fee-for-service arrangement, it suffers all the same problems that most of these programs face in terms of it not being equitably accessed in non-urban areas where, frankly, the Medicare workforce is thin. Mm. So most of these services are being offered in the eastern suburbs, the leafy eastern suburbs of Australia's major cities. If you go outside of that, you can find it quite difficult to access care. And previous studies, previous to mine, have shown that, work of people like Graham Meadows from Melbourne. What you'll also find too, and our research showed, is that, again, as a Medicare program, there are not inconsiderable out-of-pocket costs associated with these services. So each time you go to the GP and each time you go to the psychologist, you generally have to pay an out-of-pocket cost, as well as the Medicare rebate going to the health professional. So that can be a positive disincentive. So again, if you start talking about needing, you know, not 10 sessions, and the Medicare review suggested potentially up to, you know, maybe 40 sessions of care. Well, if you're paying, I don't know, say $30 out-of-pocket cost, which is sort of about an average out-of-pocket, there'd be plenty of places that were charging more than that, then you start talking about some very considerable deterrence to people who might need care. So I think in some respects, the Better Access program is a misnomer.
Right, so there's definitely room for improvement then. Last week in the budget, $461 million was announced to go towards mental health and suicide prevention. Will this help those in these regional areas, or will this be directed towards the Better Access program?
There's a mixture of things that have been that it's been directed towards, particularly around Headspace and so on. Mm. So youth mental health had a particular focus, I think, in the budget. But you have to remember, the number $460 million seems large, or not tiny by any means, but you're talking about it being spread over something like 7 years. And in that respect, I would have said that it's quite a small investment spread over many different programs. I think something like 25 different programs, in fact. Mm. So the impressions many people have of Australia's approach to mental health and the response to mental health is one of fragmentation and a lack of integration. And I have to say that the approach taken in this budget does nothing to address that.
Right. Well, there is another separate proposal that's been put forward to expand the Better Access scheme. Can you discuss that one?
As I say, I think that the evidence to support an expansion of Better Access is very thin indeed. Mm. And look, I have no doubt across 46,000 people receiving, 46,000 Australians receiving services every week under the Better Access program, there would be many, many people who would be helped by the Better Access program. Myself and others have been supportive of publicly funded access to psychology from the very start. It makes a huge difference, and I have no doubt that it should remain a prominent feature of the way Australia responds to mental illness. However, the way this program is designed has some significant flaws. It's largely unaccountable. It suits the health professionals very well. They receive their fee-for-service payments and they receive out-of-pocket costs. The onus is still on the patient to go to each appointment, to pay these out-of-pocket costs, to turn up time and time again, without potentially having, as I say, their more complex needs properly understood and met. And so I think the idea of expanding that program without having a clearer idea about the outcomes associated with the program, who's actually receiving care, what's done to people when they are receiving care, and whether it makes any difference to their lives in terms of being able to go back to work, being able to complete their education, being able to go back to their roles in their families, without knowing that. I think it's a colossal risk to the community and indeed to the taxpayer. And I think with resources available to mental health so rare, and here you have to remember that it represents about 12% of the overall burden of disease, but it only gets about 7% of the mental health of the overall health budget. So there's a big gap there, which I don't think explains everything that's wrong with mental health, but I think it explains a lot. But it means that we have a real obligation to make sure that when we've got significant investments like this program, that they are working as well as possible. And frankly, I don't think that's possible to assert currently, and makes me very doubtful about the merits of blindly proceeding to expand that program.
Well, Dr. Rosenberg, thank you very much for your time today. There's obviously a lot to review, and it's important that we do tackle these issues. Thank you very much for your time.